We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Len Casper.
Here it comes.
TV voice of the Cubs.
Cubs win!
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, baby.
Slightly above average bassist.
Slap at the bass.
Len Casper.
Well, if you have a foot fetish, this is going to be your year.
On the Score.
Wow. Now, I don't know. Forgive me, Len Casper, who joins us now on the Alphamonte Ford Hotline. Alphamonte Ford is in Melrose Park, but is this how Bernsie brings you in every time? Does he play a little bit of Pills by Sonic 45 right here?
Yeah, in fact, that is the case. And I notice they cut it off just before your voice hits the airwaves.
Which I think is wise for all
involved. It's funny.
Yes, no, it is. It's perfect.
I insisted
well,
on
it's
that
a little,
speech.
It's a little awkward. Yeah, it's a little awkward if you're bringing us back from break and you're talking over yourself, you know?
Yes. I'm trying to think. When I was doing Cubs pre and post, filling in for Zach in recent years, I think I talked over, this is what you came here for. You've got the Cubs game on the Score, from my voice to my voice. So that happens every once in a while. Have you
live.
Talked over,
you could say,
right?
You could
yeah, I could just do it live. have you talked over your own bass playing like you are right now on the Score very often? I don't know.
No, just since the new music came to be. So I think it works.
Yeah. I for some reason I didn't realize, maybe it's because I'm a frequent channel flipper, but there it was. There the Feldco jingle was in the middle of my eighth inning on Watch Marquee last night. As I'm watching Marquee, watching you guys do the game, like, hey, Feldco made its way to Marquee as well. So it's nice to be represented across the board. Good morning to you, Len Casper. We just played about 5 minutes, compressed a little bit of you and JD and Dempster talking about tipping pitches. That was great fun yesterday in that conversation. I love the fact that Derek Lee waited 7 years to tell Dempster he knew what he was going to throw towards first every single time. Amazing.
It's that is a great story, and actually I had not heard that, but it's a very Derek Lee story where it's just like out of the blue. It's like, oh, hey, by the way, I know every time you're going to throw to first. It's like, could you have told me maybe 8 years ago? Well, I didn't know if we would still be teammates. It's just, that's classic stuff. Yeah, those are the fun moments when, you know, you get, and actually the impetus for the conversation was a tweet regarding one of the, no, it was Tapera. Yeah, it was Ryan Tapera, and someone watching at home asked Dempster about it because he, you know, did the glove waggle and explained why he did it. And yeah, I thought it was a fun conversation and a 7-1 blowout, and we've had a lot of those here to start the season, so it's been fun.
Yeah, you know, I obviously momentum is an intangible concept, and difficult to wrap your head around. But boy, it was nice to see them come back and remain as mindful, as present every pitch, every at bat, as they have been all year. That's kind of been one of the calling cards of David Ross's 14 games so far, is just how locked in that dugout is with every pitch. And they were that way again last night. I feel like there is a corollary between the success of the offense and that. I suspect that they do. But either way, I expect they feel that way. But either way, it was nice to see that continue unabated after having to take the forced pause over the weekend.
Yeah, for sure. And you and I have discussed a lot of these words, and I think some of it is just, momentum and clutch. Those are words that are used a lot, and I prefer generally to say good as opposed to some ethereal quality that they have. I think it's a really good offense. I do think it flows well. I think there's a dynamic nature to guys at the top who see a lot of pitches, take their walks. Yes, they will strike out, but that's okay. I think it was Schwarber's 11-pitch strikeout that kind of started the go-ahead rally early in the game by making Pletko really work hard. And then more toward the bottom, you've got Nico Horner most days, who's a contact guy. Ian Happ, every time he puts the bat on the ball, is just stinging it. And Wilson Contreras, of all of the offensive weapons the Cubs have, I think he's been the most impressive guy to start the season. His exit velocity is basically as high as anybody's in the league. So, yeah, it's a fun lineup to watch. I think starting pitching and offense, those two things, if you get those, you can make up for other mistakes, which, quite frankly, Matt, they're not making. They've allowed one unearned run in 14 games. I think it was 10 or 11 at this point last year. So that matters, too.
Yeah, well, and it's just that they're just very much on it. They're playing well in every facet and really kind of on point and attentive. And I know I keep going back to that, but it's just so palpable to me when you see it on the defensive end as well. Let's talk about Ian Happ for a minute. He's going to be on the show tomorrow, as he is on Thursdays. Len, a hit from both sides last night, and the everyday center fielder, he's feeling pretty good. What are you seeing, you and JD, when you watch Ian Happ, especially his approach at the plate at this point?
Well, I think confidence matters a lot. Clearly, he's a very confident guy right now. He's not swinging and missing at pitches that he can't handle. It felt like when he struggled, and more prior to when he was at AAA last year, so I'm talking more 2018 and spring of 2019, kind of got out of his game plan a little bit, but he's very locked into that. And then when he gets his pitch, you know, he's not missing it. I think Kyle Schwarber's one of those guys, when he gets locked in and he gets his pitch, he does something with it, and when it's just not quite right, he'll get that pitch and he'll foul it straight back, right? So it just these tiny little adjustments. I think guys will tell you at times they have a little better pitch recognition. They're, quote, seeing the ball better than at other times. And it just looks to me like he's not overthinking it. He'll be the first to tell you that he is a thinker. And I think you and I love that about him. But it can be a paralyzing effect in the game of baseball when you think too much. And it looks to me like he's just reacting to the moment. And I'll tell you another thing, and you can ask him this tomorrow if it comes up. I think defensively, he's made strides. He made a couple of nice catches, looked pretty easy on the warning track in center and in left last night. And, you know, when one part of your game improves, it can help the other parts, too. And I think he's become kind of a weapon out there by just being able to use his athleticism and run down everything.
Yeah, I will ask him about that. It definitely looks smoother and less herky-jerky, what he does out there, his routes and just the way he goes about it. And it was a nice, he made a nice catch and left, actually, after he moved to left when Almora came in. Let's talk about the real story of last night to me. I mean, so far it's three starts, 17 innings, seven hits given up for John Lester, an ERA of 1.06, a couple of wins mixed in there. Just so much respect for what he's doing now with the changeup as the principal off speed is instead of the curve. Just the graceful aging for a guy who everybody knows, including him, is no longer a stuff guy. This is really impressive stuff, don't you think?
That changeup was as good as I've seen it. He really had a couple of the Cleveland hitters off balance. JD mentioned early in the game, and I reminded him that he has often said, when you're, you know, a left-handed pitcher and it's a nine guys batting from the right side against you, it does allow you to get in a bit of a rhythm. And he said every once in a while when I would face a lineup that would have one or two left-handed hitters, and you know, generally it was Tony Gwynn and guys like that, so they weren't bad left-handed hitters, but if you just sprinkle in a same-side batter every once in a while, it does force a pitcher to think a little bit differently. So, you know, the Indians had five switch hitters and four right-handed bats in the lineup, and I think it did allow John to really pinpoint the changeup and obviously the cutter. And I said also on the broadcast that we probably don't compare John and Kyle Hendricks to one another enough. They don't necessarily have the same repertoire. One guy's a righty, one guy's a lefty. But generally, they're not trying to miss bats, Matt. They're trying to be on the edges of the zone and get weak contact, stay off the barrel. And in John's case, I think going into that start, the contact rate was like 93%, which is really high. But it was the soft contact rate that's also high. And that's the goal here, is not necessarily strikeouts and swings and misses, but to get weak contact and let your defense do the work.
Well, I'd love to think that Kyle Hendricks' success has had an effect, just because it's so sensible the way he's gone about it. Whether you've got great stuff or not, you know, if you've got truly great stuff and you think about it the way that Kyle Hendricks does, well, then that's how you get Verlander. You know, I mean, that's how you get, you know, true Hall of Fame caliber careers. But everyone could be behooved thinking like Hendricks. Maybe it's spreading. We know Tyler Chatwood, who goes back to his high school days being a travel ball teammate with Hendricks and worked out a lot with him during the shutdown, said that he and Hendricks have talked a lot. Every time Alec Mills pitches, we think about him, or at least talk about him in the way that we do Kyle Hendricks. And now there you are with Lester. So go ahead, follow the leader at this point.
Yeah, and as a staff, they basically have the lowest velocity in the big leagues, and they've been the second best group, essentially, aside from the Indians. Oof. And the two guys who have the best stuff, you know, they've got to throw strikes, and they can't walk people, and that's been the case for Darvish and Chatwood. Tyler's last outing was not very good, but he even said after the game his stuff was good, and he was wild within the strike zone. And it was just one of those nights, kind of a horrible regression to the mean, where everything he threw, the Royals hit hard. But you'd rather get beaten that way, I think, than walking seven guys and feeling like you didn't give yourself a chance to compete.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't freaking out about that either. And we'll see the next time Tyler goes. But it looked like the Royals, who are a very aggressive bunch, had actually done some scouting on this new version of Tyler Chatwood. They're like, oh, he's just kind of attacking the zone with stuff that moves pretty well, but he's really attacking and throwing strikes. It's not the same old Chatwood. So felt like they were just kind of on him at that point. But so now he's got to adjust. We'll see. As you're kind of cycling through these right-handed arms trying to figure out who's who, there's Dan Winkler, there's Casey Sadler, now there's Ryan Tepera. And then there's Colin Ray. How are you feeling about Colin Ray, who's striking out about a quarter of the guys he faces right now and looking like he could be a find here?
Yeah, he's got a little cutting action on 93, 92, sometimes 94. He's a guy who's easy to root for, probably could have been in the big leagues, maybe should have been at some point last year, but pitched an entire season in a hugely hitters league. That's the Pacific Coast League. And he was one of two qualifiers to put up an ERA of below four. So that's not easy to do. I think that the good thing for him, he's kind of in that Alec Mills chair right now. And the Cubs have a doubleheader coming up in Cincinnati. And because they have three games to make up against the Cardinals, you've got to believe, Matt, that they've got more doubleheaders on the way. So there's going to be an opening, I think, for another starter, whether it's kind of a piggyback tandem type deal or, you know, take the ball and see how long you can go. You know, Quintana will be back at some point, but you got to be careful in the first or second start that you don't leave yourself exposed if it doesn't go well. So I think Colin Ray becomes a very important swingman for this team, who can basically pitch in any situation, and I wouldn't be surprised if he makes a couple of starts before it's all said and done.
Len Casper, should I give up the ghost on my my obsession with Craig Kimbrell and the changeup? They seem to just be trying to dial in the mechanics and get him right as the two-pitch pitcher he has been. I look around. Kenley Jansen has added a slider this year and thrown it a decent amount. Was talking with Eno Saris about this, said, you know, Papelbon doubled the slider usage over time. Trevor Hoffman added a slider late. You know, like guys do evolve and change, but should I give up that ghost? Are they committed to Kimbrell as the two-pitch guy if they can get his mechanics right?
It's a great question. It really is. And, you know, I guess, you know, I'm an analogy guy, right? So
yep.
let's say you're a young broadcaster, and I remember this for myself, and you know, you're ad-libbing and open to a show or whatever, and you stumble and you get nervous and it just doesn't flow. So then you kind of script out what you're going to say, and that kind of fixes the problem in a way because it sounds better. But the idea is to be better on your feet. And so do you jump into the fire and continue to ad-lib and work your way through it? Or do you have the temporary fix? And I agreed with you in summer camp when he flipped up a couple of change-ups, and I thought, ooh, that's an interesting wrinkle. But you got to be committed to that pitch. And the last thing a high-leverage reliever wants to do is get beaten on a third pitch that he doesn't completely believe in. And I think right now, if you're Craig Kimbrell, and based on what we have seen him do, I think he is bound and determined to be Craig Kimbrell.
Yeah.
And that is the curveball and the fastball have to be where he wants them to be. So I'm guessing, I don't have inside information, but I'm guessing he's decided that whatever weakness he has, he's going to try to make that a strength again, as opposed to let's doll it up a little bit and give them another look. I do think there will be a point where you will see a changeup or two, but I don't know if it'll be right now.
Yeah, I think you're right. Kenley Jansen's the one I can't stop thinking about. I mean, he was nothing but cutters like Mariano Rivera was for a long time. And then started mixing in the sinker, and he's 32. How old's Kimbrell? Kenley's 32. And
I think he's 32 or 33. Yeah.
Yeah. And so here's Kenley with a, you know, he still has that job for a big time team, a big market behemoth, and he's now added the slider, and he's a three pitch guy now, all of a sudden, after being a one pitch guy 2 years ago. So it is a challenging thing. All right, I wanted to throw this at you, Len. I don't know if you saw this last night. Daniel Bard, one of the better stories in baseball this year, got his first save since June of 2011. And so that's 9 years. And that night, it was the Red Sox against Oakland. John Lackey got the win. And the pitcher who got the hold in that game in 2011 between Lackey and Daniel Bard, Tommy Hotovy, got the hold.
Oh, I love it.
Isn't that fun?
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. we hardly knew you.
Well, you know, Cub fans should realize, you know, he did get to the big leagues, Boston, Kansas City. Didn't have a long career, but I think it was an instructive time in his life because, guys, today it's tricky. There are some managers and coaches who haven't had big league experience or even minor league experience who are good instructors, but I still think there's a part of a lot of guys, if you appear in Baseball Reference, that gives you a little extra credibility, and I think it did in Tommy's case as well.
I think so. All right, Len Casper, thank you, man. Pleasure.
You got it, Matt. Anytime.
Okay. We'll talk to you. It's Len Casper from the Marquee Network right here on 670 The Score. We've got a little time here. If you want to hop in, we can talk at 312-644-6767. Remember phone calls and radio? People used to do it all the time. We can talk Cubs. We can talk Sox. Pleased with the Sox bounce back last night. There are many things to discuss for both sides of town. We also, before we get out of here, have to figure out the etymology on a classic hockey thing that gets thrown in my face every time the Hawks play. And I happen to have Jay Zawoski right here. So we'll do that as well. Much more to come with me, Matt Spiegel, in for Dan Bernstein right here on 670 The Score.
Blackhawks lose. They fall in Game 1 to the Golden Knights in Round 1 of the Stanley Cup Playoffs. Keep it on The Score as we recap the loss, analyze what went wrong, and get you ready for Game 2 right here on Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago sports station.
Right side, line drive, a rocket right down the chalk and pinging right to demerit in right field. Abreu hustles home, and that bounce kept Eloy Jimenez to a single, but no matter. The Sox make it 6-2 on an absolute demon shot down the right field line.
The same thing you guys have seen, the inconsistency. I think that the approaches have been a little bit inconsistent, which is leading to some of the at-bats that look a little off. Again, consistency. There's no secret to it. Solid approaches, working both lefties and righties. He worked well against the starter and faced some righties today and was able to stay in on him. The two-strike ball down the right field line in order to tack on another run. I mean, he had some really good at-bats today, so hopefully, it's something that will continue as we move forward.
That's Ricky Renteria on Eloy Jimenez and the quality of his at-bats last night. Eloy driving in four runs last night. The White Sox ending a three-game losing streak with an 8-4 win. Eloy went into Monday night 0-22. It's Matt Spiegel here with you in for Dan Bernstein on 670 The Score. And Eloy's bat is just, it's a pleasure to watch, especially the power when it flies off that bat, as that opposite field three-run shot did. It is easy power. Some guys just have the stature, the smoothness of the swing, where they're not, it doesn't look like they're giving it every little ounce of effort and strength that they can possibly have to hit it as far as they can. Eloy is just long and comfy and loopy with that swing in a good way. I don't mean loopy, I mean like dumb. I just mean like, oh, it's got a beautiful arc to it and the ball just kind of flies off the bat. And that's why you will see Eloy being given every chance to play left field that he must until the end of Encarnacion's contract and or Jose Abreu's tenure at first base / DH and or the occasional need for Yasmani Grandal at bats at DH and or first base. And oh, by the way, it all might get derailed when Andrew Vaughn comes up and has nowhere to play. Is Andrew Vaughn going to be a better choice in left field than Eloy Jimenez by then? Maybe. Probably not, though. I mean, it's Eloy's time. He's got these next 2 years of the Encarnacion deal. So it's a year and 40 games or what have you to get comfy out there and show that he can be survivable. I felt like Eloy Jimenez over the weekend. On Saturday, me and my wife and a couple of friends rented a boat. We're on a boat up there at Chain of Lakes in Antioch. Ended up going all the way through the lakes right near Blarney's Island. Right? Is that what it's called? Blarney's Island. Yeah. That's where years ago when my band Brother was on the Kevin Matthews show a bunch, we ended up playing on Blarney's Island for KevFest. You guys ever go to KevFest? God, it was just insane. But this time we're on a boat. We're going by Blarney's Island, and it's completely empty. Nobody's there because everyone is being safe on the water. But as we were getting off the boat, and there may have been some cocktails involved, okay? I mean, sure, it's 1:15 in the afternoon, and we've been on the boat since 8 a.m. But what are you going to do by 9:30 in the hot sun when somebody brought a cooler? What are you going to do, mister or Ms.? So I'm getting off the boat, and really, I didn't realize it until I thought about it later, but I basically was like Eloy late last week when he went for that Christian Yelich fly ball down the left field line and just took a horrendous route to the ball. And then after the ball hit the ground, there was like three steps that Eloy took between the foul line and the little two-foot wall out there on the left field side. And he could have stopped himself at any point, but it felt like he made the decision, yeah, all right, this is not good. I'm going to be going down. So the best thing for me to do is to just kind of ride it out. I'm here. I'm just going to let my body do what nature's saying it's going to do. Going to ride that momentum forward and try not to hurt myself in the process. This was me on, yeah.
Into left field. Eloy going back on it at the warning track. Now coming back in, and it bounces off the turf. That's a fair ball. Uh-oh. Eloy gets tangled up in the netting, and Yelich is to third. He's coming around third on his way home, and he's inside the park with a home run.
Well, unfortunately, Eloy would tell you that he probably should have had that.
Oh, I love that from Stoney. But yeah, you know, there was a good, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes after that ball hit the foul line or on the inside of the foul line, and then Eloy fell into the net and bounced back. He had a good 15, 20 minutes where he could have made the adjustment, but he just kept going, you know what? I'm just going to let my body do what it does and try not to get hurt. This is me on Saturday. I'm getting out of the boat at 1:15, okay? I'm carrying some stuff, carrying half of a big cooler, which still had some stuff in it. We hadn't finished everything that was in there. And I'm stepping off onto the dock, and I take a bad route, much like Eloy going towards that left field foul line. I take a bad route towards the dock, okay? I start a little bit to the right. I realize I have to veer back, and I put my foot down, and I stumble. And I realize I'm going down. I am going down right here, right now. Now, I could have used some of my Wilson Contreras-like, cat-like reflexes and quickly made an adjustment and changed my stance and made sure that I don't go down. But I chose not to. Much like Eloy on that play, I chose to let my body do what momentum was suggesting it do, which is go down and just kind of lean into it and try to let my back or shoulder take the brunt of it. Hope I don't cut anything too bad on the exposed skin, and just kind of take it. Just accept my fate as a man who will be laughed at for the rest of the day, nay, the rest of the weekend, by my wife and others. But I defend my choice, and I find myself defending Eloy's choice as well. Like, once you know you're in trouble and your body is frankly a little too big and your dexterity is just a little too bad to really truly stop yourself, just kind of lean into it, just accept it, and try to minimize the damage as best you can. Jay Zawoski, you feel me? Have you ever been in this kind of situation where you know you're going down and it's best to just allow momentum to take its course?
Yeah, because it's when you try to stop the fall or try to, you know, save face when things really get a lot worse and a lot more embarrassing, and then you also get hurt. Like, if you're really going to try to catch yourself from falling, guys of our stature should not be doing those things, because that's going to lead to a dislocated elbow or something like that. But you just got to fall, man. And
yeah,
I have to ask, is there a video of this anywhere that we can share socially around the world? It's like some fail videos or something? Or
No, thankfully, I don't believe so. Unless they film everything there at the boat dock in Antioch, you know? I mean, feel free. You can call them and say, do you happen to film everybody de-boating at around 1:30?
Gotta have security footage somewhere. Yes, I guarantee you it exists. We'll have to get on that.
It reminds me of when a family member who struggles with vision a little bit happened to walk directly into a plate glass window at a Starbucks, and another family member said, oh, I'm so sorry that happened. I wish I was there to see that. You know, you just have that moment of being like, oh, that must have been terrible for you, but I really wish I was there to see that.
That happened to my daughter when they were rebuilding the studios at the Score, right? We took her in for a tour, and they had not frosted the glass yet. And she just Tommy boyed herself right into a glass door. And there was a nose print and everything. It was pretty bad. Yeah, she's fine. She's fine now.
she's fine. I mean, she may have lost the Ivy League, but that's okay.
Maybe. You know? I don't think that was in the cards anyway, knowing that I contributed to her genes. But I'm trying to think of a story for me that's similar, and all I can think of is back in grade school, we used to do these like roller skating parties where the whole school would go. And remember, you could be with people and talk to people and
nightmare.
See people in a
building. I know. Yeah, but the roller skating part, that's a freaking nightmare for a chubby kid. The worst. So,
absolutely. You're assuming I was chubby then correctly. But just the whole day, I'm like, all right, this girl I really had a crush on, right? And I'm working up the nerve, just skating by myself. Like, all right, I'm going to do it. So I literally turn around to skate against the flow of the people skating to skate to her. Her name was Debbie. And as soon as I arrive, both feet fly out from under me. I land flat on my back like a cartoon, like I slipped on a banana peel, right? So I'm on the ground, arms to my side, and she just skates past me like very gracefully. And she just does not break eye contact with me as she's skating past, just looking at me like, what is this idiot doing? And I think I lay there for about 7 to 8 hours. Just like, just go around me. Just put a cone up. That's all I need. Like, just...
Yeah. And in the montage, we see the janitor closing up shop and turning down the lights.
Just mopping around me. Yeah, it's fine.
Well, I guess this guy's a part of the floor now. Oh, well.
I'm not leaving. I don't want to get up or see anyone ever again.
But it's just, you know, I feel for Eloy, and I know you're out there. And I know you guys are out there that, like, those like, skinny, athletic bastards like Luis Robert and others, they will not know. They will never know the fear and resignation that comes with the idea that you're going down and you might as well just lean into it, you know?
So, I can't find a video. I'm sorry.
If Christine had it, she would share it with you. There's nothing she likes more than when people fall. And to her credit, she has always warned me and warned Ruben, look, if you ever fall in front of me, I will laugh a lot. And I will laugh for a long time. So just know that's coming. So it's sort of endearing when you think of it.
You would have done the same thing had it been her falling too, but you would have checked on her first. Are you okay?
Yes.
Then you laugh.
I disagree. I have more empathy for that kind of thing because I've been there. She's one of those athletic, you know, comfortable people. How dare she think that, you know, that everybody behaves like that. A texter says, but Speaks, you're a radio host. He's supposed to be an MLB level outfielder. All right.
That's a good point.
That is a good point. What is he, 22? Is he 23, Eloy Jimenez? He's not a soon-to-be 50-year-old man getting off a boat in Antioch after 6 alcoholic seltzers. Or 5, I should say. Come on.
Well, that might be more part of it than your... Than your size. I think you might have been a little tipsy to start.
And I said too much.
Yeah. Well, and also under the influence of that, you're not going to be able to catch yourself anyway. Because you're just like, oh, here I go.
Could argue that I made the correct intellectual decision to just let momentum take its course and let myself go down. You could argue that I was very much on my game despite those alcoholic seltzers.
Sure. That's right. We could do that if it makes you feel better. Yes.
I appreciate that. I'll take whatever I can get. This segment on The Score is brought to you by Burlington Stores. Have you been to a Burlington lately? They have unbelievable deals on amazing brands and styles at up to 60% off other retailers' prices. No coupons or sales, just fabulous values every single day. Whether it's back to school, work, or just back, you'll love Burlington. Texture says, well, cocktails and alcoholic seltzers, those are plant-based. Yes, they are, as a matter of fact. I am living a plant-based life, trying to get into game shape at the approach of that big birthday that is coming. Speaking of big birthdays, happy birthday to Steve Greenberg of the Sun-Times. It's a good man and thorough. Steve, who just turned 50 and beats me there by a little bit more than a month. When we come back on 670 The Score, Jay will help me as we figure out the etymology of a classic hockey thing that always seems to rear its head, as it did again last night when the Blackhawks lost Game 1 to the Las Vegas Golden Knights. That's next. Lawrence Holmes at the top of the hour on 670 The Score.
Thanks for keeping us the number one sports station in Chicago. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Marchessault again comes to Theodore, and his blast was blocked. Nice block by Mata. And it's cleared with just under a minute left to power play time. Theodore pressured by Saad. He's going to take it away to Camp right in. He scores! Brandon Saad forced to turn over. David Camp pounds up shorthanded goal to the back of the net. His first ever postseason point.
Best moment of the Hawks game last night, the shorty. Gotta love the shorty. They'll need a lot more of those kind of moments if they're gonna hang with the Las Vegas Golden Knights. It's Matt Spiegel in for Dan Bernstein on 670 The Score. Had a lot of fun staying up late, playing cards with my boys actually on the West Coast via Zoom and a cards app as we watched the Blackhawks and the Golden Knights late last night. Really, it fun to watch it for a while. And then when they skated away in the third period, it was not as much fun. But the Hawks got the shorthanded goal, and that was that. Before the game, as they were showing the highlights from the Edmonton series, and I was reminded of some things that had gone on in that series, Matthew Highmore, what he had done as a net front presence, maybe the principal embodiment of her spirit, Annette front presence, the lovely Annette with the hash, the hashtag, well, no, the dash between front and presence, as she has kept her maiden name. Matthew Highmore there, Mata, Olli Mata had a goal in that way. And every game, Jay Zawoski, a Blackhawks fan will tweet at me and say, there she is, Annette front presence. There she is. And I was asked the other day, hey, where's that from? When did that come from? And some people think it was born during the Dustin Byfuglien, or is it pronounced Byfuglien? The Dustin Byfuglien era, that's when it was born, because he was the best at embodying the lovely Annette in this run, right? Is he the standard bearer for the quality net front presence that the Blackhawks have needed, low, these past 10, 11 years?
He's the one for the Blackhawks. He's the last guy to do it with any sort of consistency. And it's funny, when he left here, he was a defenseman. But yeah, he was the... And I think that's why people pine for Annette so much, because yes, she's not been in town since Big Buff left. And he's another guy that would probably fall down in a boat, by the way.
He would
for
probably,
the same reasons you did, too.
He would probably lean into it. He would probably lean into it, yes. Knowing full well, it's like, all right, this is inevitable. I'm just going to lean in. I mean, what are my options here? I have no good option. I will lean into falling down on the dock. Yes, maybe that's why I always liked Dustin Byfuglien, in part. But no, the lovely Annette was born in the post-Dustin Byfuglien era, when we were openly pining for Dustin Byfuglien. We were like, we need somebody. We need somebody to be Annette front presence. It was during a time where we were begging Brian Bickle to be that. You know, like, why isn't Brian Bickle just throwing his body out there and just begging for the damage and the beating that comes with being in that front presence? And we later found out that maybe Brian Bickle had some reasons. He had concussion issues that he later admitted that he was kind of freaked out. It's a hard thing to do, to put yourself there to get your ass kicked all the time.
Yeah, you have to be willing. And I think a lot of times we just assume it has to be a big person to do it. But Andrew Schall will do it. You saw Matthew Highmore doing it in the series. It's more of a willingness than it is a, you must be large and take up space. No, you have to have the guts to go stand there and do it. And they've sort of, you know, the one consistent through this entire thing has been Stan Bowman as GM. And he is, for whatever reason, not prioritized adding a lot of tough physical players like that. And yeah, he brought back Andrew Schall this year, which was a huge necessity, but he's been hurt. And without him, they don't really have anyone to fill that role, and they haven't for a really, really long time. And Bickle did it kind of reluctantly for a while, but most of the Brian Bickle highlights I remember are him shooting from a distance, you know, like just coming down the wing and trying to snap one past the goalie and it not working and people getting frustrated that he wasn't standing in front.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. Like, hey, go over there. Take your big butt and go over there. It seems like it's this accepted hockey wisdom, that you must have somebody in there to create traffic and be a problem. And yet Stan Bowman has not really shown a willingness or desire to get somebody to do that. Because maybe he thinks that you can coach people into wanting to do that, like they tried to do with Bickle, you know?
They coached it into Dylan Strome last year, and he even talked about how it was a big change for him to have to go and do that. It was something he wasn't asked to do his entire career. And the other thing is, like, a lot of these guys, they've all been the star player somewhere, right? Like, coming up through junior, even the guys who are fourth liners now were the best players on their teams most of their lives. So it's an adjustment they have to make. I remember I used to do some bar events with John Scott, who was like a renowned bad hockey player, goon, giant fourth line guy. And he said, I knew that if I wanted to play in the NHL, I had to learn how to fight. I had to learn how to be physical, because I knew once I got, you know, to the higher levels, I wasn't going to be the best player anymore. Some guys have learned that, some guys haven't. And look, a guy like Andrew Schall is a perfect example. He was never a top prospect. He was never a guy who when you were reviewing guys in the Blackhawks pipeline, you never thought of him as a key to success for the team, but he came up and he did what he had to do to stick, and he's had a really good and successful career, you know, plagued by injuries. But when you play that way, that's going to be the result. But he's made a ton of money. He's won championships. He's become a bit of a cult hero for going out and doing just that, just going where he needs to go, getting uncomfortable, taking some hits, and he's reaped the rewards of that. So I think
I love shin
finding
pads.
More guys like that is necessary. Yes,
yeah,
exactly. And remember the headbutt goal that didn't count? That guy was willing to do anything it took to get the puck in the net. And that's how you win in the playoffs when you don't have as much skill as your opponent.
Yes, absolutely anything. I have there are a few moments where, because we work in this business, every once in a while you find yourself in a situation and you're like, what the hell am I doing here? And being on the ice with Mac in Boston after the 17 seconds, Blackhawks, the two goals where Boland finishes it off and they beat the Bruins. I think that's the one. Or is it after Philly? I'm trying to remember when Andrew Shaw had cut his cheek. It was Boston, right? Shaw had cut his cheek, and there was still blood on the cheek. And I have a picture somewhere of me and Shaw on the ice, and I'm posing as close as I can to the blood. Hey, come here. Bring over that blood. Bring it over right here. And it's like,
bleed on me.
Yes, bleed on me, kid. Yeah, that feels good. But like that's one of those moments. You're like, all right, that's that dude. That dude willing to do absolutely anything. And you need guys like that. I think it's does Vegas have guys like that? Do the Golden Knights have guys like that, or are they just so good and so fast that they barely need guys like that?
Vegas does what they need to do, and that's they have a very versatile team. They have guys willing to do that, but for the most part, they just have the puck the whole damn game. That's kind of their thing, and that's, again, when we talked about this earlier, the reason the Hawks were able to get away with not having guys like that back in the day was because they were so good, they were so deep, and they could just keep the puck from you until it was in the back of your net. That's kind of what Vegas does. But if a game deteriorates like that, they've got guys who will go do that for sure. Like, you saw Ryan Reeves, who became public enemy number one when he was a St. Louis Blues player.
Yeah,
he is one of the most feared guys in the game, and he's one of those guys too. Like, yes, he's huge, but he's 6'2", 225. He looks a lot bigger than that. But he'll go stand in front of the net. He'll go punch your goalie in the face, whatever he needs to do to get that advantage. He's going to do it. And I think the days of the enforcer are long over. I'm not saying the Hawks should try to find a goon or someone who's going to fight. I really don't think that's something they need.
It's got to be in the skill set, though. There's got to be the willingness you need, because you don't even have to be that big. I mean, Taves used to be very, very willing and capable at being in the frontier. He'll still do it.
Yep. Yeah, he'll do it. Sod will do it. Kirby Doc's been doing it a lot lately. Over the break, Doc has sort of developed. He's gotten stronger. He's gotten heavier on his skates, and I don't mean like weight wise, but he just has learned how to control his size and strength better. And he's shown a willingness now to get in front of that and battle a little bit. And as his confidence has grown, as he's realized, like, hey, I'm better than a lot of these guys out here, I can play with these dudes, you've seen him with a lot more confidence. And that's another part of getting in front of the net is, I know I'm going to stand here. I know I'm going to be a nuisance, and you're going to have a problem moving me. I'm telling you, half of that thing is mental. You just have to be in the mindset to say, you know what, I know I'm going to get cross-checked. I know I might get a stick in the nuts here. But if it hits my stick and goes in, that's a good thing for me and my pocketbook down the road. So,
hey, you know,
yeah,
what?
I like that Doc has sort of added that element to his game here.
Just lean into it. Just lean into it.
Yeah,
Like me falling on a Doc. Just go ahead. Not a Kirby Doc necessarily. I should have clarified that. Yeah,
we don't want that Kirby Doc.
Yeah, we don't want that for anybody. It was really fun having three teams active last night. And I think what the Hawks are getting out of the NHL bubble is we're going to look back on it, hopefully, as being a little bit similar to what the Phoenix Suns are getting out of the NBA bubble. That Phoenix team started out 6-0. they're so much fun and enjoying themselves, and they're young, and they're clearly going to take something from that into next season and beyond. And a boy can dream that the Hawks will also do that. It's another two-team day here in Chicago. The White Sox and Tigers will get underway shortly, but the Cubs and the Indians later on at 5:10 Central Time. That'll be right here on 670 The Score. And then tomorrow, Thursday, all three teams active again. And I get to be here tomorrow morning in for Bernsie from 9 to 12. And Friday morning in for Bernsie, 9 to 12. Very much looking forward to it. I wish we still did transition. But in the COVID times where all of us are broadcasting from the Hyundai Studios right here at home, as a matter of fact, then we don't get to do that. We are and have been broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. The Tech Zone, where you've been reaching out, is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at rosenhyundai.com. And as always, breaking news on The Score is brought to you by Pennzoil. Motor oils made from natural gas. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Thank you so much to our guests today, Mike Florio from ProFootballTalk.com, Kevin Weeks from NHL.com, and Len Casper from Marquee. Be back here tomorrow for me, Matt Spiegel, in for Dan Bernstein. Coming up next, it is Lawrence Holmes. He has Dave Revson on. We haven't talked much college football today, but there's certainly lots to discuss there. Dave Revson on at 1:30, and James Naveau, the podcast partner of our guy Jay Zawoski, is on at 12:20 with Lawrence. Tomorrow, Ian Happ will be on the show. Kyle Brandt will be on the show, and much more. Looking forward to it. Have a great day, everybody. It's Spiegel in for Bernstein right here on 670 The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.